This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider immediately.
Welcome to Your Health Connection. I am Dr. Ronald A. Johnson, president of Clark Atlanta University. This program was made possible by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University, by WCLK 91.9 FM, and by Clark Atlanta University itself. Your Health Connection focuses on today's healthcare information to help you improve your quality of life.
And welcome. You're listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. I am your host, Patty Walden. Glad to be here today talking with you about eating well, staying active while battling cancer. We are here today with some wonderful guests. We are here today with Mr. A.J. Joyner, Mr. Anthony A.J. Joyner, who is a throat cancer survivor. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
Good to have you, along with Ms. Joan Giblin, who is with the Winship Cancer Institute, and she is a nurse practitioner, not an oncologist. She's a practitioner. But I want to go ahead and get started with you, AJ. I want you to just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. I read some things about you, but I want to give you the opportunity to just share your story, because I don't know your story.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'll go to the cancer story. So, this was 2005. I was actually getting ready to go out, and I was shaving my neck, as guys do before, clean up my beard and all that, right? So I'm getting ready to go out, and I noticed a small lump on my throat. And I paid it no mind. You know, I kind of felt it a little bit. Paid it no mind, and I went on about my business. This was August of 2005. So fast forward a few more months, I noticed that it started to get a little bit bigger. And I mentioned it to my girlfriend at the time. I was like, hey, I got this strange knot on my throat. And she's like, boy, go to the doctor. but I didn't, of course, because, you know, men are stubborn, and I'm a man, so I didn't. So that was Jesus. So now fast forward to February. So I, you know, 6-7 months have passed. And now it's gone from a small knot to I can actually notice almost like my neck, like a big fat lump on my neck. at the time I was on radio. Oddly enough, the week before I went to the doctor, I had a show about cancer survivors.
Wow.
So I went, you know, had the show the next week, and I had started getting shooting pains to my head. So I was like, man, that's weird. So I was driving, and I had a real sharp shooting pain to my head and pulled over, and she's my wife now, but she said, look, if you don't go to the doctor, we're going to have a problem. So that day, I drove straight to Piedmont Hospital. And I went in. I was busy bee, you know. So I went in, I'm like, hey, had this strange knot on my throat, and the nurse felt it, and she was like, you know, we're going to have to do some tests. And I was like, okay, tests, what, you know. So they did, I can't remember, but they did a scan. I don't remember what it was called. Like, I think it was a CAT scan or PET scan, and they did it with iodine. So they said, well, you're not going anywhere. You're going to have to stay here for a while. And I thought to myself, look, I got stuff to do. Like, I'm not going to be here. You know, just call me and let me know what's going on. And they were like, no, you know, we need to get a sample of, you know, your neck. And we also found a mass in your head. This was all in the same day. So I'm like, wait a minute, a sample of my neck and a mass. Long story short, you know, they held me there in oncology. And radiologist, or what's the brain doctor? It's the neurologist. A neurologist came and he said, well, you have a little tumor on your brain, and then you also have a mass in your neck, and we're not sure what it is. So, you know, they ran some blood tests, but they did let me go. they said, you're going to have to come back tomorrow. And again, I'm shocked, like, okay, what is all this stuff? So another nurse came out and she said, well, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and this is at Piedmont Hospital. Mm-hmm. She said, I've been doing this for a while, and I've seen this before. She said, it does look like it may be a cancerous thing, but we need to test it first. We have to get a sample, a biopsy. So, you know, she said it kind of matter-of-factly because I guess she'd seen it so many times before. But when she said it, it was like I got dizzy, like the room got blurry. And I thought, cancer? I was 33, 34 at the time. So I sat down and I said, okay, you know, and the first thing that you think is death. You're like, oh, my God, cancer. So you go through all these first, I guess, psychological thoughts of what's going to happen. You know, what's my legacy going to be? Like, what if this is it?
Let me ask you real quick before sure. you move on. Mm-hmm. You only started to feel that way when you heard the C word?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes.
That, you know, even though you had gotten the news first time, just, hey, there's this thing, it's a tumor, mm-hmm. that you didn't feel that frozen feeling mm-hmm. until the C word.
It didn't register.
Interesting.
Again, I think it's the machismo of being mm-hmm. a guy, and you know.
Sure.
But when you hear cancer, because you understand the gravity of cancer, even though you've never had it before, you know, everyone knows someone who's been lost to cancer,
yes.
right? And you know someone who's been affected by cancer or a different type of cancer. So I guess the gravity of the word put everything into perspective. And then the first thing I thought was, man, what if I had gone back? And I didn't even know, like, the depth of it at the time. Mm-hmm. But the first thought that I had once I, you know, came to my senses was, what if I had gone back to the doctor back in August,
right.
you know? So that was my thought. But, you know, I went, came back. That was on a Thursday. So the next day I ended up going to the neurologist's office, and they did a different kind of scan. And they told me that it looked like it was a meningioma, and that I didn't have to worry about that okay. as much. And then they scheduled me for the biopsy, which was the following Tuesday. So I go from full speed ahead on Thursday, living life, to surgery on a Tuesday, you know, for a cancer biopsy. You know, it was definitely one of those situations that kind of turns your world upside down. And, you know, once they did come back with the diagnosis after the next day after the biopsy, you know, my wife and I, we were just girlfriend, boyfriend. So I start thinking about her because we're just dating. I'm like, man, is she going to be here? And then I think because I'm from small town Louisiana, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't have family around. Right. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, got to tell my mother and my grandmother, you know, that's who raised me.
Right.
And then I'm thinking, you know, I'm 34 years old. I haven't really accomplished other than corporate America at the time, just kind of moving up the ranks. I started thinking about all the things that I may not be able to do. If I take a step back for a minute, one of the first things they said after, before I went home, they said, well, you know, whatever you do, there's only one thing, Anthony, that we don't want you to do. And I was like, okay, what's that? And they were like, don't Google it. And of course, I didn't even get home before I was on my phone, like, what in the world is going on? And what is this? So, you know, when you Google cancer, you know, the first 100 results are death, like, oh, you're right. dying. And then you put in throat cancer and they talk cigarettes, and I didn't smoke.
Right.
And they, you know, all these things. So I'm like, you know, what is it? What was it? But you know, it was quite an experience, and I don't want to dominate mm-hmm. the conversation, but I actually wrote about it, and I called it the cancer roller coaster, mm-hmm. right? Because, emotionally, just like you said, the gravity of the word, and then, you know, that began a journey,
right?
Because when they diagnosed me, I think if I remember correctly, it seems so long ago, even though it was only a decade, but I think it was at stage three. I think there's A, B, and C.
Well, the state, if you had lymph numbers. Nodes, did they find out where it was?
Yes,
originally?
It was. So the lymph nodes stopped it from, it was in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
and the lymph nodes stopped it from spreading to the rest of my body.
It's usually a stage 4, A or B.
Okay, well,
it's different from stage 4 other cancers. It's very localized.
Right. So it was beyond, I guess, localized. Is that the right word?
Localized to the neck.
Yeah.
It doesn't usually go anyplace else.
Yes, it was localized to the neck. Okay. So that when I went over to Winship, they told me that it was going to be brutal.
The worst 7 weeks of your life.
Yes. Yes. So it was brutal. The first step in, I guess, treatment was to, number one, I had to get a PEG tube.
The feeding tube.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
because we worry about your nutrition.
Absolutely.
Right.
At the time, I was roughly 190 pounds, which is what I am. Well, now, today, I'm about 180. Well, I guess that's 190. The nurse said, well, it's going to be tough. And, you know, I'm more of a upbeat, positive, live in the moment kind of person. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, why would she say something like that? Why wouldn't she try to, you know, tell me to be positive or, you know, but she was telling the truth.
Yeah. Let me just pause since you mentioned that you went over to Winship mm-hmm. Cancer Institute and just reintroduce Joan Giblin, who is over at the Winship Institute and serves.
I serve as the director of survivorship at this
program.
Point, but so, I actually worked in the clinic where he was treated. I worked in head and neck, and it's called the Aerodigestive Clinic, for many, many years. So I've been at Emory for about 21 years. I've been a nurse for about 55 years.
Okay. So why don't you share with us, Joan, what your role is? What do you do on a day-to-day basis as nurse practitioner?
My current role is that I see patients such as yourself, anywhere from immediately after treatment, sometimes 10 years after treatment for long-term care. We sit and we talk. I had a clinic today, and I spend a lot of time with patients talking about their lives and the way that their lives are and the changes that have happened, all of the things you mentioned, the fear, the lack of sleep, what they've gone through. And I have a huge number of head and neck cancer patients because those people have long-term side effects that go on for many years. They don't just go away when they're finished. And that's a lot of what I do. And a lot of it is support. Some of it is diagnostic. But we have a big cohort of patients who had stage 4 head and neck cancer who survived. Mm-hmm. It's a different cancer than it has been in the past. It is not the smoking, drinking related. We do still have that. But we treat them very differently. We don't treat them with surgery. We don't do big facial changes, the things that we do on many of these patients. And you're one of the lucky ones. But I see you have your bottle of water because that's the big thing.
That's the big thing.
We give out medication. The medications we use to treat these people can actually affect their kidneys. So it's like push, 2 liters of fluids, 2 quarts of water per day. And for the rest of their life, most of these patients, because we do radiate the areas where their saliva comes from, they do have dry mouths.
My mouth is dry right now.
It is.
So let's take a moment here. We are here with Anthony A.J. Joyner, who is a cancer survivor and nurse practitioner Joan Giblin on WCLK. We are taking your calls live. Please call us at 404-880-9255. If you prefer to tweet, you can do that at CCRTD. And like AJ said, undoubtedly, we all know someone who lives with cancer, have died from cancer, is fighting cancer. And your story out there might not be throat cancer. You might know someone. You might have a friend. You might have a family member. Or you might be hearing a story that mirrors Anthony's. And if you do, and you have a question, while we have our nurse practitioner here who's very knowledgeable, you can certainly feel free to call in and ask her a question or tweet us at CCRTD with your question.
I would just like to add that there are increasing numbers of survivors. We expect to have 20 million survivors in probably 2024. It is an upward. We didn't used to have that when I first entered oncology care. We didn't have survivors. We had some, but a lot of people were like you, the big C word, you were going to die from it. And now it's pleasantly surprised because we have increasing numbers of people because, number one, people are aging. So there's more older people like myself. But we're also doing very early interventions. With the disease that you had, probably didn't make a big difference. Once it was in the lymph node, it was probably kind of the cat was out of the bag. So, you know, delaying probably didn't. And a lot of people do that. I should have done differently. I should have gone. And that's you can't look back. You have to just look forward, mm-hmm. which is what you've done, which is a really good thing. We also have excellent treatments now. Yes, some of them are really horrendous. Bone marrow transplants. I just had somebody today that I saw who had a bone marrow transplant 2 years ago, a young 20-year-old. And those people plus the people who have head and neck cancer, I put them in the same kind of place. Nutrition and exercise, which is what we were going to talk about tonight, are very, very important to those people. The PEG tube is put in patients who are going to get radiation and chemotherapy because about week four, you can't swallow anything. And these people run into problems with their kidneys and they run into problems with hydration. They start losing weight. And when you start losing a large amount of weight, your reserves are just not there. We want to keep people at their normal weight as best we can, not lose more than 10% of your weight. And many men don't want the feeding tube, and they say, well, you know, it's not going to happen to me. Well, it does. It happens to 99% of the people. There were a few people who managed to get through without it, but we do. It's kind of the requirement. You have to have that done.
So let's talk about physical activity. AJ, how did that diagnosis change your life to increase your physical activity if you didn't have any or to do it?
So I will admit, like, right after... So I went from 190 mm-hmm. to about 133.
That's a lot of weight loss.
Right. So I lost, almost 60 pounds.
In what amount of time?
About a six week period.
Okay.
So.
Even with the feeding tube.
Even with the feeding tube. So that was the best diet I ever had.
Wow.
It's a diet no one wants. But I lost a lot of weight. So in order to, just get back to my normal weight, I had to eat a lot, right? So they, after my last chemo and radiation treatment, I was working with a nutritionist. And she, kind of gave me a diet with a lot of protein and all that kind of stuff. And I was working out, I think probably 4 days a week then, just working out, and I was eating really good. And the first job that I got afterward was a consultant. So I was a traveling consultant. And the funny thing, you mentioned the feeding tube. I still had my feeding tube in mm-hmm. for a while after, I want to say a while, but it was in for a while after my last treatment. I'd already started back working.
Not until you started to gain weight and you were able to eat a full amount.
Right. Even though I told them to take it out. So
we're more cautious than that.
Yeah. So if you can imagine, just if you're listening, just to the left of your belly button, if you put your pointer finger there, that probably 4 inches to the left of my belly button and about an inch up, that's where the tube is located. And the tube is probably 12 to 14 inches long, maybe? Yeah,
probably.
So it's 12 to 14 inches
and
long.
It's rolled up.
And it's rolled. Right. So in order to hide that, because I tried to take life back to normal, right? And it was kind of weird because I didn't tell my employer because it was a new job. Right. I lost when I was a contractor when I found out that I had cancer, and they let me go immediately almost. Because, I was a contractor and they needed people to do the work.
Right.
So when I told them what was going on, they were like, hey, it's not personal. We just have to have someone here that can do the work.
Right.
So I was immediately let go. So there went my money. But anyway, so I went back to work and I was hiding the tube under my shirt. So I wrapped the tube from my front of my stomach all the way around to the back. And then I would tape it. I had the medical tape. So I would tape it. So I tried several different...
But you were very thin, so it was very easily seen.
And I did it, and I would go in all day. I would be in the bathroom changing my tape. And then the actual hole that was through your stomach would leak. So the fluids that were in your... and your body would leak out through the hole. It wasn't painful or anything. It was just a hole. Mm-hmm. So I remember this one time in particular, because of the nature of my job, I do a lot of presenting, or I did a lot of presenting. So I was presenting, and I was, as you can guess, just so nervous that something was going to happen. So I could feel a little leak coming from the front. And, I reached for it, and all of a sudden the tube that was taped to the back came apart. I mean, it came off of the tape, and the liquid that was in my stomach just poured out, but it was inside my shirt. Mm-hmm. So I'm standing in front of the room with, you know, clients and everything in the building, and I have this big wet spot that just goes down my leg. So I explained to them that I didn't use a bathroom on myself. and then that was when I told them that I was, I had cancer and I had a tube. Really embarrassing. But anyway, back to the nutrition. So I worked out 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. A lot of water, because to this day, my body doesn't mm-hmm. produce saliva like it should.
The radiation does mm-hmm. that.
The radiation almost killed my salivary glands. I'm on thyroid medication.
Because radiation affects the thyroid. These are very common things that people go through that have had the kind of cancer that he's had. Mm-hmm. And we monitor them for the rest of their lives on those.
For the rest of my
life. But again, it is the rest of your life, and it mm-hmm. is a good life.
Yes.
And it's different. It's a little bit different. Because you do have, some different things that go on. But most patients do very, very well. The key to nutrition, though, after mm-hmm. After you've been treated for cancer, some people do lose weight. There are some cancers where people don't generally lose weight. Breast cancer is what I take in particular. And those mm-hmm. people complain that when they get on certain medications to suppress estrogen production, that they actually gain weight. But, some of that is inactivity as mm-hmm. well.
Right.
Inactivity will definitely put weight on you, especially on people who are normally active. Keeping your muscle tone up during treatment, though, yes. is very, very important. So what can happen during that 6-week period or whatever the treatment period is, people become so deconditioned that it takes twice as hard to get back. We have a relationship with the YMCA, and I work with the coaches at the Y, and I educate them, and I say, you can't expect these people. These people want, the minute they're finished, to go right back to where they were, but they're so deconditioned, it can take 3 times as long to get back as it did to fall off. So for 7 weeks would then take to get back to it. But the fact that you kept exercising is probably one of the best things you did for yourself.
Well, this was after treatment. Because mm-hmm. during treatment, I was demolished.
Oh, okay, so it was after.
I couldn't.
But it takes a while to get back.
Oh, my God. The first day that I worked out, I had a friend who does CrossFit. So, again, back to my machismo, right? So I go to try CrossFit, and I'm like, okay. She's like, take it easy. It's your first day back. So I did. I went to the CrossFit workout, and I literally vomited and passed out.
Wow. Which is why we work with the coaches, mm-hmm. that many people don't have that, especially some of the personal trainers that are out there. They push, 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 not realizing what's going on.
Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to go on a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about exercising and diet and nutrition. We're here with AJ Joyner, cancer survivor, and Joan Giblet, nurse practitioner at the Winship Cancer Institute. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Is your annual inspection past due? Regular checkups by your doctor are the key to finding health problems early. 1 in 6 men will get prostate cancer. If you have a father or a brother who has had it, your chances of getting the disease are even greater. If you are a man over the age of 50, schedule your appointment today. Discuss whether testing for prostate cancer is right for you. This message is brought to you by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University and WCLK.